Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. Show your team pride with the Georgia Bulldogs debit card. Check out gucu.org/godogs for more details.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The college football world today is talking about LSU and Alabama. The offensive showcase put on display in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on Saturday with Joe Burrow and all the touchdowns that he threw, and he is spectacular. And Tua Tagovailoa doing the best that he could to keep up during that game, and it was a thrilling game. I was watching it before Georgia kicked off against Missouri. But here's what I'm going to tell you. For all the attention that the LSU offense is going to get, and to a certain extent the attention that the Alabama offense is going to get trying to come back and make that a game as of late, the Georgia defense right now, when you talk about units within the SEC, the Georgia defense is plenty good on its own. And while it's a lot more interesting to talk about offense, and admittedly even for me from time to time, the Georgia defense right now, while it'll get less national pub, really is rounding into form, rounding into shape at just about the perfect time. They've gotten a little bit lucky that they've been able to play a good number of backup quarterbacks this year, and I won't deny that, but the stats speak for themselves. Another shutout pitched on Saturday, this time against Missouri. Third of the season for Georgia in that regard. You have to go back to 1981, back in the glory days of the Junkyard Dogs, to find Georgia that good when it comes to pitching shutouts. Three of them thus far for the year. Pretty impressive stuff there in that regard. And as you might imagine, after the game, Georgia coach Kirby Smart was pretty happy to throw some love the defense's way. A group, as I said, that Smart seems to see, seems to think is kind of coming together here at the right time. Here's what Smart said about it.
I mean, we play hard. We play consistent. We don't control who they put in front of us. Our kids go out and play really tough and physical, and that's all we can ask them to do. And they've done a great job of that. The buy-in on that side of the ball, the playing a lot of players, the camaraderie, the defensive staff. Dan and his staff have done a great job of putting plans together, and the kids have executed them. It's hard for me to judge, you know, who we've gone against.
So when you hear Kirby saying that about the defense, when you see Georgia pitching another shutout on Saturday, it brings to mind that old football cliche. The defense wins championships because, let's face it, that's what Georgia's playing for this season. They want to win an SEC championship. They want to get back to the college football playoff. They want to win a national championship. Can defense still win championships? It's one of those things that gets said so often, it almost doesn't get checked enough, doesn't get verified enough. It's a little bit like waiting 30 minutes to go swimming after you eat. You know, it's one of those things of you've been hearing this your whole life, but is it really true? And I think, you know, last couple of years, with the proliferation of elite offenses around college football, I think that there was some growing questions of, well, does an elite defense still win championships? Is this a sport now so dominated by offense that you've got to be scoring 50 points a game if you really want to keep pace with the nation's best, especially when you see what happened last year, the way that the Clemson offense was so prolific, the way the Alabama offense was so prolific, they played in the college football playoff national championship game. You're kind of left on the basis of a recency bias to say, well, you've got to be scoring like that. You've got to be playing that kind of offense. Otherwise, you're just not going to be able to keep pace with the nation's best. But the truth is, when you dive a little deeper into the stats, and I'm going to try to make this as quick as I can, being a team led by defense could still very much be a very reasonable way to win a national championship. Because let's face it, right now that's kind of what Georgia is. I'm going to give you some advanced stats and some kind of more basic old school stats. When you look at the picture for Georgia offensively right now, it's not necessarily all that pretty. Based on Football Outsiders offensive efficiency, they call it FEI, Georgia just 22nd right now. They're 32nd in total offense, which is the total number of yards you've collected over the season divided by the games you played. And they are 36 in total scoring, which is the number of points you've scored, per game. The defense, a much better story overall. Sixth in defensive FEI, fifth in total defense, which is yards allowed, and second in scoring defense. Only the Ohio State Buckeyes have yielded fewer points thus far than the Georgia Bulldogs. So a defensive balanced team, a team more in the direction of defense than offense, is that really a recipe for winning national championships? As I said before, when you look at the overall total number, numbers, it's actually a lot more likely than you might think. When you look at the defenses, for instance, that have won national championships recently, let's just use like the FEI, advanced metrics here for a moment. Last year, Clemson was second in that regard. Alabama was second in that regard going back to 2017. Clemson was ninth in that metric going back to 2016. Alabama was first in that metric going back to 2014. Really the only kind of mediocre, or I should say good, not great, defense to win a national championship in the college football playoff era is probably Ohio State way back in 2014. Offense is kind of more all over the board. Once again, let's keep this to the advanced metrics here for a moment. From Football Outsiders, their FEI, Clemson was very good offensively a year ago when they won the national championship. They were seventh, but the 2017 Alabama team for the entire season was just 12th. The 2016 Clemson team that won the national championship, they were sixth. The 2015 Alabama team that won the national championship, 24th offensively, according to Football Outsiders. The 2014 Ohio State offense was better. It was second. Really, when you look at these advanced stats or even the more basic stats overall, what you see is that when a team wins a national championship, it's far more likely that team has a great defense in the playoff era than a great offense. Good offenses have been good enough in the playoff era, but virtually every team that's won a national championship, with the exception of Ohio State in 2014, had a truly great defense. And when it comes to the stat that maybe matters more than any other on this, the whole notion of defense winning championships, the aspect of defense that may lead to championships more than anything else may actually be scoring defense, the number of points you give up over the course of the season. Let me give you a couple more stats here in terms of the teams that have won the college football playoff national championship. Last year, the Clemson defense for nationally, number one in America when it comes to points allowed. Alabama in 2017, also first in America when it comes to points allowed. The 2016 defense for the Clemson Tigers, the national champion from that year, they're the one outlier. They were 10th in America back in 2016 when it comes to points allowed. 2015 for Alabama, they were tied for second. So if you look at the last four teams to win a national championship, three of those four teams were either first or second when it comes to points allowed for a season. And right now, Georgia is second in that metric. So when you start looking at these stats, all of a sudden, even someone like me, who's been a little skeptical of the Georgia offense overall and concerned that the offense might not quite be good enough to get Georgia over the hump for a national championship, might not quite be good enough to battle against a team like LSU in the SEC championship. The truth is, the recent stats in college football in the playoff era suggest that if you've got a great defense, as long as you're at least good offensively, that might be enough. Especially if you're really, really good, and the stat that might matter more than any other, the limited number of points you allow for a season. Georgia, as I said before, pitched another shutout on Saturday, and after the game, Kirby Smart talked more about just how stingy the defense has been as of late. Here's more from Kirby.
Yeah, you can't say enough about the defensive staff, the game plan they put together, the buy-in from the kids. You know, we preached all week how well these guys ran the ball on us last year. Thought they ran the ball on us as good as anybody last year. And the defensive players kind of hung their hats on that. And they were all chomping at the bit at the end to make it tough to score. And I thought they showed some competitive character there at the end with that stand.
Yeah, I thought that was the most thrilling moment from the game on Saturday. I'm not even being funny. Late in the game, Georgia had been playing some backups, but Missouri trying to get in there and score. They may have even wanted a rushing touchdown to break that streak that's been standing for Georgia all season long. Georgia pretty clearly bowed its back there at that moment and pitched another shutout. And as I said before, when you look at these national champions, you know, Clemson last year, you know, Alabama the year before that, go back to Alabama in 2015. National champions have been really good at keeping teams off the scoreboard. Right now, Georgia's doing that just about better than anybody else in America this year as well. You need some offense if you want to win, and it could be that Georgia has just enough to go along with a defense that seems to be rounding into form at the right time, dominant when it matters here late in the season, and we'll see how that recipe comes together against Auburn this Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Georgia United Credit Union. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video, no matter how you get to us, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us, and as I said before, we're really happy to have Georgia United Credit Union bringing it to you. And, of course, you want to celebrate the big shutout for Georgia on Saturday. One of the great ways to do that is with a Georgia Bulldogs debit card from our friends at Georgia United Credit Union. They got three different design options to choose from when you open your free Georgia United checking account that also includes options to earn interest. Now, Georgia United Credit Union is so much more than a bank because they've got 19 branch locations all throughout the metro Atlanta area. They're going to offer you access to 100,000 surcharge-free ATMs. They provide enhanced security features and convenient access to your money through online banking. So, website to go to find out more about this and to get your Georgia Bulldogs debit card is GUCU.org/GoDogs. The website, once again, GUCU.org/GoDogs. All right, I want to talk about another one of the big storylines from the game on Saturday coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let me also remind you about my friends at Kroger, who've got a really cool deal going on. You can get ready for the holidays and kind of get your meal taken care of. You don't have to spend a whole bunch of time prepping and cooking, all that kind of stuff, staying in the kitchen while everybody else is having fun, the living room, wherever else. Kroger and Home Chef are going to help you choose from a ham or a turkey meal, plus all the sides, including stuffing, rolls, casserole, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, and so much more, and it's just $70. You can order online or over the phone, or you can go to your local Kroger and just talk to someone there in the deli. They'll take care of you for that, but if you want to get it in time for Thanksgiving, the last day to order is November 25th, so keep that in mind. All right, we're going to get John Stinchcomb here in a moment today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. Before that, though, let me also address one of the key issues for Georgia on Saturday. You know, at times it seemed like the offense was once again scuffling a bit, but there was also, once again, maybe some mitigating factors for that. Lawrence Cager leaves the game near the end of the first half with what appeared to be another shoulder injury. Georgia had to rotate a lot of offensive linemen after Trey Hill left the game with an ankle injury, and then Cade Mays comes in for him at center, and then Mays ends up getting banged up, and then you have a situation where Isaiah Wilson also at least left the game briefly there for a moment. So a total of three offensive linemen injured, Georgia's best wide receiver injured, and the Dogs have already been used to kind of playing without him here for a little while. After the game, Kirby Smart provided a bit of an update on all of those guys. Here is what Smart had to say.
I think Cage will be fine. He bothered his shoulder again, but we think he's going to be fine. Probably could have came back if he had to. The other guys, I think, are fine. We got Trey with an ankle. Kay was fine. He could have came back in. I don't know who else. Isaiah's fine. He's fine. Yeah, Isaiah played.
So Kirby giving you a little bit of an update there on all of those guys. This is one of those things, though, where I think you've got to be a little bit careful, though, because obviously going into the game against Auburn on Saturday, this is one of those moments when you kind of shift into kind of a need-to-know basis type thing where, you know, there's going to be gamesmanship on the side of Gus Malzahn. We've already seen that with coaches when it comes to injuries this season. Kirby may be participating a little bit of gamesmanship here right now. I certainly, as a Georgia fan, I know many of you feel the same way. I certainly hope that what Smart says about Cager there proves to be true, that really, oh, he was fine, he's going to come back in. Or all these offensive linemen are fine, they're going to come back in. To my eye, that they could have come back in. To my eyes, it certainly seemed like the most severe of the injuries of the offensive linemen probably belonged to Trey Hill. He was hobbling the most coming off the field. It seems like he was down the longest while they were tending to him. I know Connor Riley got an eyewitness look at Hill leaving the field, ankle pretty heavily taped as he was coming off the field there, but Kirby even kind of adds him into that group that was fine. Obviously, there was also a lot of shifting and moving when it comes to those offensive linemen in terms of, you know, the way the ball was snapped to Jake Fromm after that with Cade Mays, who's now played every position for Georgia in a game. He's practiced at center plenty. He got a chance to play at that position on Saturday, and certainly there's a little bit of a rhythm disruption when you move from your typical starting center to Cade Mays, and then after that, Mays goes out and Jamari Salyer comes in, and Kirby kind of talked about the evaluation of what he saw from Salyer, what he saw from Mays once Trey Hill wasn't able to go anymore. Here's what Smart said about that.
Yeah, I'd have to reserve judgment. You know, I can't really say. I mean, I know going in the game that each one of them practices there, and they get reps, so it's not like, I mean, Cade took reps with the ones last week at center. He gets reps, and Trey works out at guard, so he gets a lot of reps. Jamari does not get as many, but he gets some. So we'll watch the tape, see how they did.
So obviously, the hope here is that Trey Hill is ready to come back. Obviously, the hope here is that Georgia can kind of keep Cade Mays and Jamari Salyer where they have been in that kind of super sub role, and you want that depth going into a game against Auburn. You know, one of the things I was probably asked the most frequently on Saturday when I was bumping into folks before the game began, not that you know, you're looking past Missouri completely, but admittedly, Auburn's one of Georgia's biggest rivals. It's one of Georgia's toughest games on paper, and admittedly, there's a lot of curiosity about how that game is going to play out next week, and people would, you know, say some version of, B.A., what do you think about Auburn having that week off? What do you think about that bye week? All these bye weeks late in the season for Georgia, Missouri had one there as well, and that's not a perfect situation, and when you kind of add hostile environment, Jordan-Hare Stadium's one of the toughest in all of college football, when you add that week off for for Auburn. The last thing, if you're Georgia, that you want to have kind of going into something like that is a little bit of an injury situation. So maybe we'll take Kirby Smart at face value here. Maybe what Smart says is exactly the way that it is. The Cager situation, maybe not quite as banged up as it looked as he left the field on Saturday. The offensive lineman, despite the fact that you had three of your top guys going out of the game, Smart says they could have been healthy enough to return. You hope that's the case, because for Georgia against Auburn this week, it's certainly going to be an all-hands-on-deck situation. A tough game to win. Georgia's just a narrow favorite. As healthy as possible, that'd be a pretty good recipe for beating the Tigers on Saturday. All right, we're going to have a lot more on our program today. We'll hear later on from DeAndre Swift and Jake Fromm how they felt about the Georgia offense and kind of where it is. You head towards the stretch run for the season. But for now, for more on what happened against the Dogs in Missouri and a little bit of a look ahead of the Deep South's oldest rivalry, let's talk to our buddy John Stinchcomb.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, so Georgia pitched another shutout on Saturday. John Stinchcomb had a chance to see that. We'll talk to him, and of course we'll also talk to John coming up again this Thursday there as well. As part of our Marlowe's matchup, we are live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. We'll be there at 6 p.m. this Thursday, Marlowe's in Brookhaven. I've already heard from a bunch of people, including in Athens on Saturday, saying they are looking forward to being there with us for that, and I can't wait for all of that. Here's the address. It's 3575 Durden Drive Northeast. That's 3575 Durden Drive Northeast, Brookhaven location of Marlowe's Tavern. Looking forward to being there this Thursday. Can't wait for that. John, hope you had a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the dog shutout against Missouri, and it's a pleasure to have you joining us now.
Well, it's always great to be a dog, and I'm telling you, this defense continues to impress.
Yeah, I think it does, and I kind of talked before you joined us that, you know, defense wins championship is one of those, it's an old cliche, it's been around for a long time, and admittedly, there's been a good portion of this season where I kind of wondered if defense alone, or maybe better said, defense as the primary catalyst, if that was going to be enough for Georgia. Right now, Georgia has a great defense, and hopefully when it matters most, a good offense. The offense is not going to be great in the same way that the defense is. And when you sort of look back at the recent profile of college football playoff national champions, I'm starting to think that, hey, you know, in comparison to some of the other teams who've won it, Maybe this can be a recipe that even though last year you had this sort of explosion of offense with Tua at Alabama and Trevor Lawrence at Clemson and the stuff that Oklahoma's done in recent years, that that's not the only way to win in college football. That if you have enough offense, and you do have to have enough, but if you've got enough offense and you've got a great defense to go along with that, maybe that kind of is enough right now. Admittedly, I was skeptical about that at one point in the season, but I don't quite feel as skeptical about that anymore.
Well, I think it just, you have to know what you got. And perspective is huge here. We're talking about the top teams in the country because Georgia is in that discussion. They're a top five team right now. But you just have to see how the game goes. I think South Carolina is case in point. Our defense is elite, but our offense has not shown the ability to step up in kind of key moments. So if a game gets away from you, which South Carolina, you get a touchdown off a turnover with a pick six and you're playing from behind, you just got to know that your defense can keep you in the game, but you have to find ways to score points. I think Georgia's defense is elite. I think they are arguably the best defense, or at least in that discussion in the country. And continue to show it week in and week out, and the depth that they have is impressive because they roll guys in and out of the game and keep them fresh. But it's got to be a concern if the game doesn't start the way you want it, and you get a couple touchdowns down for whatever reason, would we have the firepower to get back in it? I think you have the weapons. I just don't think it's been able to put it together in a way that's been scary to any defense out there up to this point from Georgia.
Yeah, so here's what it kind of comes down to for me. Two issues facing the offense in the games that will follow this season. Texas A&M's no pushover. Auburn on Saturday, that's going to be obviously a huge showdown. Georgia's only a narrow favorite there. Start thinking SEC championship beyond that, and then hopefully maybe a college football playoff. For the Georgia offense to be as good as it can be, you know, not the best offense in the country, that door's just not open to Georgia right now. But for the offense to be as good as it can be to kind of take a next step forward, I think it comes down to two things. They've got to find some way to be able to run the ball with the boxes as stacked against them as they are right now. And I thought you did a really good job on our Marlowe's matchup show this past Thursday talking about not just the extra guys in the box, but the fact that it's a personnel situation where in some cases they're bringing in extra defensive linemen to kind of, you know, go against the Georgia offensive line. So it's not just extra guys to block, but it's guys who wouldn't even be in the game necessarily if the other side didn't have a pretty good idea that Georgia wants to run the football. You can't completely abandon the run even against a really stacked box. So schematically, whatever else, how do you figure out a way to kind of grind out those tough yards and get that even when teams are really selling out to stop you? And then beyond that, it's a scoring situation. You know, what Georgia did on Saturday was probably settled for a few more field goals than UGA fans would have liked. Can you turn those field goal opportunities into touchdowns? Can you find a way to get rushing yards even when the defense is absolutely almost to 11 guys worth selling out to stop that run? I mean, John, doesn't it kind of come down to those two things just a little bit?
Yeah, I think you have to exploit the defense when they compensate, when they overcompensate in one way or another. And right now, I don't think we've done a great job of it, candidly. I mean, I think Georgia is in a really good situation. I like the team that we've got, and I think we're capable of making a real push to be one of the four teams in the playoff. But, I mean, right now, defenses are saying, we don't feel a threat from your passing offense.
Yeah.
And we're able to put a fifth defensive lineman in the game at times when it's not short yardage and goal line, which is virtually unheard of. And we're going to put that safety down in the box, and sometimes it's not even a safety. They bring in an extra linebacker on the field. So they're challenging Georgia to either, one, exploit those opportunities in the pass game, or two, generate plays in the run game against a stacked box, a defensive front that's not amenable to a lot of plays. I mean, you're limited in your playbook when the defense is saying, I'm overcompensating because we know you're run heavy. And you have to find ways to exploit that.
And from that standpoint, you know, the fact that George Pickens did emerge seemingly in the second half after Lawrence Cager left the game with injury, that's obviously a positive sign in that direction. Came within an eyelash of getting three touchdowns. And for Cager himself, you know, John, I said before you joined us, Kirby said that, hey, in a different situation, he could have returned and played in that game. I'm not quite so sure that's not a little bit of gamesmanship on Smart's part, just given the fact that this has been a bit of a lingering issue for Cager. I hope that what Smart said is the absolute truth, because I think that Georgia needs him on Saturday. But, you know, a healthy Cager and a Pickens, those would seem to be your two guys right now that you really feel like can truly exploit when they do have those stack box situations. If you're going to take advantage of that, it's going to be a Pickens or a Cager, the most likely to get that done, assuming Cager's on healthy enough on Saturday, right?
Right, and right now I think they've played pretty much the same receiver role of that X down the field fade or back shoulder throw. I'd love to see an expanded route tree from George Pickens. I think the receptions that he's got have not come from, I don't know if this is the right terminology, but a complex route. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, you make your release off the line of scrimmage, and he's just turned it to full speed, and he's got incredible ball skills. But, you know, you don't see a lot of breaks mid-route, and I'd love to see an expanded route tree from a bottom line. And then health is a factor. Lawrence Cager is your best receiver, and I don't think that's debatable at this point. So if he's not 100%, which he hasn't been, you look at the last few games, he makes big plays and head off to the sideline he goes, at least for the rest of a series or the rest of a quarter. And I think that's probably something that you're going to battle for the foreseeable near future until he gets some recovery. But, you know, Auburn is a team that it's got to concern you at least a little bit. I know it does Vegas because they have us as less than a field goal is the line right now. So Cager's health along with that offensive line, there's a lot to be a little bit anxious about this early in the week. And I hope Coach Smart isn't just offering up some gamesmanship on health and trying to put out a red herring on Cager not being as injured. I hope that's very much the case because he's a needed weapon in this offense.
I agree with you on the Auburn situation for sure. It seems like one of the things that Georgia's had an issue with, whether it be Braden Fehoko last year for LSU or obviously Javon Kinlaw for South Carolina earlier this year, when you face not just a good defense, but a good defense that's really good in the interior of the defensive line, obviously that's what Derrick Brown brings to the table for the Tigers. In a situation like that, the Georgia offense has just kind of struggled even more so than normal. And when Georgia potentially has a little bit of a shaky situation at center, given the fact that, to my eyes, Trey Hill certainly seemed a little banged up on Saturday. Hopefully that ends up being good news as well. But with a situation where you had to play three different centers on Saturday, where Georgia's facing a great interior defensive lineman, and that's a spot where the Dogs have struggled a little bit, that's the sort of source of all my anxiety for Auburn. You know, I think that Georgia's favored in this game for a reason. Even in a tough environment, there's a reason that Georgia's the favorite. I think that Georgia, on balance, is certainly the better overall team. But where Auburn is really strong, that's a spot where Georgia can have some trouble from time to time. And I think the center of our conversations with what we're doing here on the phone, what we'll do Thursday as part of our Marlowe's matchup live from the Marlowe's in Brookhaven and kind of everywhere else the Dog fans going to get together this week, doesn't it kind of all come down to what happens in the center of the field with the interior of the Georgia offensive line trying to handle Brown and the interior of that Auburn defensive line? Isn't it really just about that basic this Saturday?
Yeah, it is. And it's a clash of the Titans. And unfortunately for Georgia, Auburn has a week to heal. I mean, they're coming off a bye week where everybody's got bumps and bruises this time of year. It's a physical game and a physical conference. So for them to be 1 week fresher and an already vaunted defensive line that you had to know going into this game, even before the season starts, that's where the game's going to be won. I think Auburn has the health advantage, if nothing else, in that they've got a talented group, as does Georgia, but they're coming off a bye week, and we've got three offensive linemen that are in various stages of not 100%. We're not exactly sure where they are on that scale, but suffice it to say, they're not 100%. And Trey didn't come back to the game. Cade didn't come back to the game. Isaiah leaves the game. That's a big-time concern. I think the tackles are continuing to prove their elite level of play, and our offensive line interior is well above average. I think we've got a great offensive line, but if they're not 100% going up against Auburn's front, that's a concern right now. And it would be a challenge in an area that you circle if everybody's 100%, and right now we're not. So it's definitely something to watch. I think you're going to have to really key in on how the guard center guard play. I mean, even Solomon Kenley is recovering from his own ankle injury. So, Hallie, you got to win on that interior of the offensive line, and it's going to be a real challenge this week.
Before we let you go, let me get your thoughts on what you saw from Alabama LSU on Saturday. I thought it was a thrilling game. I thought it was a terrific performance from LSU. Not quite sure what this does to Alabama now in the loser's position for this game in terms of the playoff race. My guess is that'll be hotly debated in the days to come. But admittedly, this is a pretty good showcase. And while I was sitting in Sanford Stadium on Saturday, I had my phone in my hand or my laptop on, and I was watching every play of this because I thought the game itself was that terrific. John, how entertained were you by LSU-Alabama, and what did you ultimately think of the outcome?
Well, I think LSU is the best team in college football right now, and that's with all due respect to Ohio State. I think their performance against Alabama is case in point. You know, Alabama, they don't go away lightly. And I think every Georgia fan who's watched the past few years of any game that we played against them can attest that you got to play 60 minutes. And you look at that first half, and Alabama, I mean, geez, could they make any more self-inflicted wounds?
Yeah.
You got the Tua fumble as they're inside the 10-yard line where, you know, a ghost pops the ball out of his arm. How many times can you expect that from him? He's one of the best players in college football, and what an unexpected error that is. And then you have the punt where the snap bounces off his hands. So I think those kind of things are just rarities for Alabama. I think their biggest concern is that secondary. I mean, LSU continue to expose that as many elite players as Alabama rosters each year, that secondary is not performing at the elite level that they have consistently in the past. So there's some more holes than we're used to seeing from that Alabama team, but LSU, in my opinion, very much looks like the real deal.
Yeah, they do. And speaking of performing at an elite level, that's what John and I both hope to do this upcoming Thursday. Starting at 6 p.m., we're at the Marlows in Brookhaven. This is our Marlows matchup. This is going to be a great time. We'll debate the playoff stuff. We'll talk about Georgia and Auburn. John will give you some very candid thoughts on kind of how UGA can get it done against the Tigers and where the season can go from there for the Dogs. We'll also squeeze in some recruiting stuff. It'll be a live broadcast there that night at 6 p.m. Then we'll be hanging around after that to enjoy some of the chef-inspired food and the craft cocktails. And, of course, talk to you with a very, very fun Q&A. It's always a great time. It's 6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday, November 14th. Let me see the screen again so I can give the address to our radio and podcast audience. 3575 Durden Drive. That's 3575 Durden Drive Northeast. They're looking forward to seeing all of you at the Marlows in Brookhaven this Thursday for our Marlows matchup. John, I'm excited about being there with you. Can't wait for it. Hope you enjoy your week, and I'll look forward to being in person with you this Thursday at the Marlows in Brookhaven.
Likewise, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good thoughts from John there about the LSU-Alabama game. As you might imagine, we're going to talk a lot about that as we go cruising around the SEC here, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. Before that, though, let me quickly remind you about Royal Caribbean. One of the things I like about them best is easy to get to. You know, just right kind of near Orlando there, Port Canaveral. That's the port that I go out of when I've been on Royal Caribbean cruises before. I would advise you, that's a great place for you to be out of as well, whether it be the Amplified Ship Mariner or the Seas or kind of anything else, kind of sailing there out of Port Canaveral. One of the great things about those cruise vacations is that private destination in the Bahamas, the all-new reimagined perfect day at Coco Cay. I'm talking about a fantastic kind of private island experience. It's got like the thrill side and the chill side. So you've got like the cabanas and the water you can kind of float around and lay in and relax in. You get all the water slides, the helium-filled balloon. I mean, it's like an unbelievable experience. When you watch on video, you get a chance to see all of that. When I see this video for myself, always makes me want to be there. So listen, it's been a long season for all of us. When it's over with, you're going to want to celebrate in style. That means get in touch with a travel advisor and booking yourself some Royal Caribbean travel here. You can go to royalcaribbean.com. That's the website to find out more information. You can also talk to your own travel advisor, but royalcaribbean.com, great way to get connected to a travel advisor and just do a little window shopping and find out about all the great cruise vacations available from our friends at Royal Caribbean, turning 50 years bold this year, redefining cruise vacations since 1969, and really 2019, 2020, and beyond, it's only going to get better. All right, a few thoughts on LSU-Alabama here for a moment. Let me start the LSU side on the winning side. I said this on Friday, and it's been completely validated. I mean, obviously, I have been on LSU since the start of the year, predicting them to win the SEC West. So I'm not going to, you know, pat myself on the back for that too much. When you lose, say nothing. When you win, say even less. That's kind of the mentality and the mantra that I try to follow here. But we did call this one. But, I mean, ultimately, I think that the thing that you got to take away when it comes to the situation with LSU is that the overall profile of Ed Orgeron as a coach is far different than some people think it is, and admittedly probably far different than I thought it would be when he first took that job. You know, Orgeron, because he's a guy who got to look like this, you know, people think he's a cartoon character, right? They sort of think of him as almost like an extra mascot for LSU. But even before this Alabama game on Saturday, Orgeron had been proving himself to be quite the effective coach. His record against the spread in SEC play was tremendous. It was tremendous. Hadn't beaten Alabama until Saturday, but he'd beaten virtually everybody else. So he had been a pretty strong coach on the field even before Saturday. And obviously the win against Alabama just validates that even more. Joe Brady, the offensive assistant who was hired this year, still not officially the offensive coordinator. That role still belongs to Steve Ensminger. But Brady on the offensive side, the impact that he's made on this LSU offense, on Joe Burrow in particular, Nick Saban talked about that post-game. And that can't be overstated either, that there are a few assistant coaches in college football. When you bring them in, they have a way of changing everything. Coaching impacts offense. The way you design plays, the way that you scheme them up, the way that you use the talent at your disposal, that just matters. And right now, LSU has got a schematic advantage on the offensive side of the ball. You know, their quarterback is good, their receivers are good, the overall talent is good. But the way it's being used right now is the huge difference here. Joe Brady is the most important name in all of college football for 2019. He's going to win the Broyles Award as the nation's top assistant, but his actual value is even more important than that. No one's more valuable to any college football team, not Chase Young, not Tua Tagovailoa. No one's more valuable to any team than Joe Brady is to LSU right now. Now, as far as the Alabama side of this goes for a moment, here's something I think very interesting you notice about Alabama. In addition to kind of all the razzle-dazzle of the Joe Burrow offense and, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, some mistakes, and Alabama had some special teams miscues, here's what you're also kind of left with here as well. In this game, LSU ran for 166 yards. Alabama ran for just 123. Alabama averaged only 4.4 yards a carry. LSU rushed for 3 rushing touchdowns. Alabama had just the 1 right there. Alabama has become less of a physical football team than it once was. And you can't overlook that part of this, that in the transition from what Alabama once was to what Tua Tagovailoa became and all these great Alabama wide receivers, the old bread and butter that used to be for Alabama dominating the line of scrimmage, this Alabama team doesn't do that. If you want to talk about individual players who contributed to this win on Saturday, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is right there alongside of Joe Burrow or anybody else. He may have been actually the MVP of the game for LSU on Saturday with 3 rushing touchdowns. This is just not as physical a team as it once won in Alabama, and you got to pay close attention to that among the reasons why Alabama lost to LSU. And obviously, I think based on the lack of resume for Alabama, this ought to be the end for them. Alabama should not be a college football playoff team, just given the fact that, you know, while they have a good loss, they don't have a very good win on the schedule right now. They could get one of those at Auburn coming up pretty soon, but in comparison to other teams, they're just not going to have quite the same resume. So if there's justice among the college football playoff selection committee, the loss by Alabama will end their season, at least in terms of playoff contention. But somehow I don't expect that to exactly be the case. Let me do one more thing real quickly here as we cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, on the LSU-Alabama game. There was also the moment after the game where Ed Orgeron was apparently caught on video, one of his players live streaming in the locker room. I can't play the audio of this, but by now you may have heard it. Orgeron kind of drops pretty heavy expletive in mocking Roll Tide, Alabama's famous cheer, and most of the response around the country is, oh, how can stuff like this, the locker room's supposed to be sacred, how can something like this escape the boundaries of the locker room and make it public? Here's what I'm going to tell you I believe. I believe this was a sanction leak. I do. And even though it seems to be the kind of thing that I think in politics they call this a Kinsley gaffe, you know, the kind of thing you're not supposed to do. Oh, you're not supposed to mock your opponent after the game. You're supposed to be like you are in an ESPN interview or a post-game press conference, very buttoned up, very careful. I think this is a calculated move on the part of LSU to declare full-scale war in Alabama. There were some published reports that LSU players were going to Alabama recruits who were in the stands on Saturday saying, y'all ought to come to LSU. I think the whole thing and the way that LSU celebrated this post-game is quite the alpha move by Orgeron. And by comparison, Orgeron, strong in stature. In comparison to Nick Saban, a lot smaller in stature. I think right now Orgeron just looks like the bigger, more substantial figure compared to Saban, who's, let's face it, in the winter of his career and from just a physicality standpoint, doesn't quite match the base that Orgeron seems to have in his voice. I think something about the way that video came out on Saturday, like I said, it to me feels like an intentional sanction leak. And even if it wasn't, I think it's going to have that effect on the recruiting trail. Right now, LSU just sort of looks like the alpha program in comparison to Alabama, which has become a little bit more Big 12 on the field. And Nick Saban matching the masculinity of what Ed Orgeron brings to the table? For me, not quite so much. Not right now, anyway. We'll make that your SEC through as we cruise around the SEC with Royal Caribbean. And with that in mind, let me turn my attention back to the Georgia offense here just for a moment, because I thought there were a couple of very interesting statements from a couple Georgia players that I wanted to talk about from Saturday. First of all, we talked about this with John Stinchcomb a moment ago. John saying, hey, these defenses stacking the box against Georgia. John says, if you are a UGA, you got to make the opponent pay for doing that. Georgia, did they do that enough on Saturday? I guess it depends on your point of view on that. But in terms of what John said about the way in which teams are stacking the box, Georgia running back DeAndre Swift has certainly noticed that right now. Here's what Swift had to say postgame.
Yeah, they had a lot of people in the box. It was one of them teams that play unique defenses, trying to outnumber us every down. So it was tough sledding.
Tough sledding indeed. And as I said to John before, you know, you're still going to have to run the ball. That is the strength of UGA. You can't just completely abandon that. You can't completely let the opposing defense dictate the kind of plays you call. But schematically, I'm not quite so sure how you get it done when opposing defenses are throwing that much personnel against you. You know, bigger players in the field, more guys in the box, more of that kind of thing going on. That becomes a really tough thing to battle with and a really tough thing to deal with. I'm not quite so sure what you do about that. But one way or another, in terms of the offense finally eventually breaking out one of these big games, Jake Fromm actually believes that's going to happen before the season's done, which is certainly a hopeful tone to strike. Here's Fromm also postgame. I found this to be pretty interesting.
The inches are there, so close, you know, on the kind of over route to Cager and then the go ball there to Kiaris there at halftime. I mean, we're so close in the inches. We just have to execute a little bit better, you know, when we get there a little tighter in the red zone. And I think we're so close. We're so close to kind of executing on all cylinders. Sooner or later, we're going to break it out, and it's going to be really fun to watch. Man, I can't wait. I'm holding on to it because, you know, when we come in the locker room, everybody knows that we can play better. And that's just – you kind of have that feeling, and you want to play the best you can. And I think sooner or later we're going to break it out, and it's going to be exciting to watch.
I mean, listen, if that is true, then Georgia's picking a perfect time to actually break out in a big way. With Auburn and Texas A&M, the SEC East on the line in those games, potentially an SEC championship beyond that, and hopefully a college football playoff appearance there as well. I said off the top of the program that for a long time this season I've been pretty skeptical that Georgia had enough offense to win the championship. And admittedly, I'm still a little curious there in that regard. But the way the defense is rounding into shape, the way that it's rounding into form, the fact that it is, like previous national champions in the college football playoff era, been as stingy as it has been, as long as that remains true, as long as the point differential looks okay, then overall, Georgia should be in okay shape. But I will be admittedly curious how the offense plays on Saturday against Auburn. All right, we will get ready to wrap things up. And as we do so, before we do our Gator Hitter update, let me also send out some happy Veterans Day greetings. Obviously, I'm very proud to be in a family of veterans. My dad, a Vietnam vet. My wife's dad, also a Vietnam vet. Both my grandfathers served. My mom's dad in the Korean War and my dad's dad in the World War II era. So very, very honored to come from a long line of veterans. And I'm also really proud of the fact that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union, we have a lot of veterans, you know, current armed forces and previous armed forces that tune into our program each and every day. That's a real pleasure and a real honor for me to be able to provide a little entertainment for you. And thank you so much to your service for our great country. By the way, Gator Hater Updater, how about 1,108 days? That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's a number we like to watch climb the rest of this year and hopefully many years to come. Thanks for being with us, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.